Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. In this episode, I'm speaking to Faris Aranki about the hidden dynamics that make or break effective teamwork. Faris is a former school teacher turned strategy consultant who's now the founder of Shiagetto Consulting. He's helped organizations like Coca-Cola and Amazon sharpen how their teams think, collaborate, and execute. We unpack his formula, IQ, EQ, and FQ, and explore why great ideas fail without human connection and laser focus. If you lead a tech team, this one's packed with insight you can act on today. I'm your host, Adam Horner. As a coach, I help CTOs from startups to enterprises to lead with clarity, confidence, and strategic impact. And before we get into today's topic, I want to share something relatively new, something I built to help you on your leadership journey. If you've ever felt like there's no playbook for being a CTO, then you're not alone. I've been there too, and I hear it every week from the CTOs and tech leaders I coach. That's why I created this podcast and have been publishing episodes for over a year, because technology leadership is challenging, and figuring it out alone makes it even harder. The CTO Playbook is now not only a home for this podcast, but also for a growing community of CTOs and a suite of coaching programs, all designed to help you grow as a technology leader. Think of your leadership journey like a mountain, a climb with many routes. CTO Basecamp helps you build breadth and clarity into your role. CTO Elevate sharpens your strategic impact. And CTO Ascent, that's a path you can take anytime. It's your personalized coaching journey designed around your specific needs, whether you're just starting out or already leading at the highest level. Your path, your pace, your playbook. I've just launched CTO Basecamp, a new cohort-based program to help technology leaders strengthen and broaden their leadership foundations. If you're ready to stop figuring it out all the hard way and start leading with clarity, confidence, and a strategic impact, the waitlist is now open, with early access and a discounted rate available for early joiners. You can learn more about CTO Basecamp, CTO Ascent, and what's coming in the near future with CTO Elevate, as well as find all the podcast episodes at www.thectoplaybook.com. Now, back to that IQ, EQ, and FQ. Faris, it's great to have you here.
Adam, real pleasure to be with you, the listeners, the viewers. I'm really excited for our conversation.
It's brilliant. So, and in fact, hands down, the most wonderful introduction I've had on somebody on LinkedIn, because you sent me a personal voice note and a very friendly one at that. So I already knew that you understood the power of human connection straight away.
Yeah, I think human connection is what it's all about. And I know we're going to talk about it and dive into it, but really the more human you can be, I think the further you go in life, but maybe I'm biased, but we'll explore.
I mean, I'm right on that note then. So let's keep that human connection. So for the listeners who don't know you, let's get them to know you a little bit better. Could you just tell us a little bit about what you do and really most importantly, why you do it?
Yeah. Well, if you meet me today, I am the CEO and founder of a company called Shiagetto. Shiagetto is the Japanese word for a sharpening stone. It's the metaphor of we sharpen human beings. We make them a little bit sharper to think smarter, work better together, be more focused. And this whole business came about from a combination of my careers, basically. I've had multiple careers. I started off, Adam, as a high school teacher. I used to teach the dreaded subjects of maths and economics.
That students love.
The ones students love, and they're not afraid to tell you how much they don't love them. But I taught those for 6 years. I taught in different countries around the world, so I had a real flavor of different cultures and how the different kids in those cultures learn and sort of behave. And then I moved into the corporate world. I actually ended up making a giant switch and I joined an oil and gas firm where I learned all about the world of oil and gas and ended up in their strategy team and realized I loved looking at strategy, making decisions, deciding the best options. And after a few years doing that for the oil and gas firm, I was headhunted into strategy consulting, the world of McKinsey. And I spent 12 years, I went from analyst to partner, completed the game, so to speak. But during that time, this is where Shiagetto was born, because I came to realize more and more, just focusing on IQ when it comes to strategy isn't enough, right?
IQ being the intelligent quotient.
Being the smart part of strategy. Here is your perfect answer. And everyone wants a perfect answer. But do you know what? If you give a group of people a perfect answer and they don't work well together, it doesn't matter how good the answer is. You know, they're not meant to do it. So I spent most of my latter years as a strategy consultant fixing teams, getting them to work better together. And that's when the penny dropped. That's what I should just do, because I'm really good at it. B, I really enjoy it, because it's that circle back to the school teacher days. It was helping a group get something that they were frustrated with, and then their life would be better as a result. So that's what I really love doing. And that's why I so focus on human connection.
That's quite the journey to go from being a school teacher to basically a human whetstone.
Human whetstone, exactly. I love that phrase.
Good stuff. So yeah, so in quite the journey. So you said that took you all over the world. So just give us a bit of a flavor of some of the places that you went to and some of the things you discovered, because I know that being a partner at a company like McKinsey, A, it affords you travel, and B, you get to work with some fascinating people.
Oh, I mean, so thanks to my career and all stages of my career, I've lived and worked in Latin America. So, not just anywhere, you know, when I was a school teacher, I taught in El Salvador, which at the time was the world's most dangerous country. So I've got a whole podcast of stories just about living there for 2.5 years. I also lived in Nepal, lived in the Himalayas, worked at completely different culture again. Then I lived and worked in the Middle East, working in Palestine, and I've worked all across, you know, if I think about all the strategy projects I've done, they've taken me all over Europe, a lot of the Middle East, the Far East. And the best bits when you were in the world of oil and gas is going to things like offshore rigs, going to power stations in the middle of nowhere. You know, for years, that was my life. You know, I'd go and see giant man-made objects that were doing amazing things and tried to optimize them, trying to come up with a better strategy for them. So
yeah, so you spent your fair share of time in helicopters as well then?
Been in helicopters, been in speedboats. It sounds glamorous, you know. I don't think there is a consulting James Bond, but that's how we like to think about it.
Yeah, like James Bond without the tux.
Exactly. Yeah, more spreadsheets.
Yeah. Well, let's shift the story from sort of the personal side to something that every tech leader faces at some point, and that's the team dysfunction. We've all been there in one form or another. But me personally, I've seen a couple of extremes. I've been in rooms where there's been that one person who has to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
I've been on the other extreme, or another extreme. I'm sure there's plenty of them that you can tell us about, where there's somebody who just doesn't want to make a decision and is just sort of deferring to everybody else to make a decision. But listen, you must have had some fantastic stories. Can you just sort of take us back in time and take us into that room with you when you've been in some of those really dysfunctional teams and thought, oh my goodness, this is the worst?
Yeah. First of all, just consulting alone is full of what we jokingly refer to as insecure overachievers. You know, very techie, very smart people who, for a lot of their early formative years, were top of the clocks, were always getting everything right. So that is just their default setting. And if you put a bunch of those people in a room together, great things happen, but also great stress happens, because they invariably just keep wanting to stay ahead of each other and pushing each other. And their default setting, you know, I think back to many of those rooms where I was in, is just trying to out-IQ each other. I'm smarter than you. I can build on your answer. And they're constantly building. And if you're in it, you yourself get sucked in. But when you're on the sidelines, it's two rams butting heads.
And there's as much noise as well.
There is as much noise. And yes, it's not in any sort of physical aggressive way, but it is still a tension in the room and it's palpable.
Yeah.
And usually this is happening at 1 a.m. because, you know, you're working intense hours. And so I've seen a variety of things, from it does build up and, you know, can be lead to throwing things around a room, or more likely it leads to people just being sullen with each other or sitting in a strop. And that's the bit that's not really catered for. And that's when you just lead with IQ, unless you repair those relationships, the next day it's just adding on top of it. And that's what I would see constantly in those scenarios.
And that's for those people who are at the center of it, who have got the ego and the rush to try and do that. But then there's often those people who sort of sat out on the sidelines who've either been excluded or have excluded themselves from those scenarios as well. I've certainly seen that a few times, people sort of mentally check out and think, I'm not playing this game.
Yeah. I've recently been working with a team where there is very much a lady, she's the only lady in the team, and that's happened. They're all very smart, very good. But because she keeps getting marginalized by this sort of very sort of competitive environment on an intellectual side, she just has checked out. And you can see, as the independent, she's there sitting sort of doing something else during these meetings. And it's not good for her. It's not good for them, because she is a phenomenally smart person. And they're missing that sort of her input, which, you know, has a different viewpoint as well.
It's staggering, isn't it? So when you find this in teams, what is it that's generally getting in the way? Is it usually personal behavior? Is it structural gaps? Is it perspective? Is it competition? Is it as simple as putting it into a bucket?
It's not as simple, but it does come down to we as human beings like to be heard. Yeah, like to see ourselves in an idea. So if you feel marginalized, unless you're very emotionally mature, you sort of exhibit behaviors of, you go in a strop, you go sullen, you all the things that you associate with kids. Adults still do these. If they don't feel involved, they just do more of an effort to try and mask it. But you can spot it pretty easily in a room.
And I mean, you work across industry, don't you? Not just tech. So, I mean, is there something that's unique or special to tech teams that you've observed, with unique dysfunctions for engineers or engineering leaders? Or do they express them differently?
The same behaviors. Yeah, but right. What I'd say is perhaps a little bit more in the tech world is the trifecta is the people drawn to tech are usually more IQ than EQ, and so their natural response is to double down on the intellect rather than go, oh, hang on a minute, how are you feeling? Two, because of it revolves around tech, people often hide behind tech, right? The tech solution. So many times things could be resolved by a simple conversation, but, I will go and have a look at the Slack thread where they've been sending passive aggressive messages to each other, avoiding having to have a face-to-face conversation. I actually say sometimes tech gets in your way. As much as it streamlines, it allows you to avoid a conversation that you should be having. And then three, invariably tech is, there's less people involved sometimes. So those relationships become more crucial. Or many tech companies start small when a founder who is very techie can handle just having 10 colleagues. But, I'm thinking about one of my clients at the moment, tech firm. The founder is completely out of his depth now that they have 200 employees. It is not his natural position. And therefore, his underlying behaviors are just compounded because he feels stressed and under pressure because he still feels, as the leader, he needs to be fulfilling all those roles. So I see those time and time again, that the natural tendencies, the hiding behind tech and being out of their depth when the dynamic changes and more people are involved.
And those people being out of their depth is generally not something that is unfixable. It's just, certainly in my experience anyway, it's often a case of, okay, here's a couple of tricks to help lower your stress levels. And then here's a few techniques or pathways to follow. And one of the things I see a lot of tech teams leading on, and CTOs especially, is Patrick Lencioni's 5 dysfunctions of a team. Yeah. I mean, let's just use that as a comparison first, but for other people to get an idea of where you're coming from. So how does your view align or maybe even differ with the sort of executive team concept that he champions?
100%. I'm a massive supporter of Lencioni and the 5 dysfunctions. I go, only 5? Teams have way more dysfunctions than 5. But, if you don't know it, it's a very simple way to gauge what side your team is at in terms of trust, how they deal with conflict. Do they confront issues or let them fester? Do an honest assessment of your team. But there's lots of schools of thought around this, that the most successful teams are not the ones that have the best individual performance. Okay, they're the ones who are knitted together the best.
Right.
So say that again. You can have people who are average quality, however that is judged, who will outperform a team of superstars. This is shown time and time again in so many fields, from sport to medicine to tech.
There was a great movie on that. Moneyball is a really good example.
Moneyball is a really, really good example, and take, if you're a sports fan, pick a sport, the Galacticos have never succeeded, right? Because of the egos, because of the lack of teamwork. And so Lencioni summarized that perfectly, but you can spot it in teams, right? Do they have a way of releasing tension? Do they trust each other? Are they double checking each other's homework? All these things are unhealthy. And I say to a team, let's say you're 100% performing. Each of these things will chip 5, 10% away from your performance. And every time you sweep it under the rug, you're just delaying a problem. And that's where the whetstone comes in. You're turning up physically, but you're not performing to the best of your ability.
So some of it is just getting stuff out from under the rug and examining it. And some of it is actually just brushing off the sharp edges of what would otherwise be great people.
Yeah, and you don't know what you don't know. So it's not just the behaviors. There are ways to optimally come together that are more efficient, more. And, I say to every team, it's Hanlon's razor, which is most problems are not born out of being malicious. They're born out of lack of awareness. All right. Or so none of you in this room generally are a-holes. I say, right? You're not here to destroy each other. You're just unintentionally rubbing each other up the wrong way. And that's what's causing the problems.
Yeah. So Hanlon's razor, remind me, that's the one where it says, don't ascribe to malice that which can equally be described by lack of knowledge or incompetence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, and it's so often the case. I mean, you do come across a few jerks here and there, but so often it's, oh, I never realized that annoyed you, or we've just never. That's why it's so important in the early days to build connections, but be surface. Hey, I'm this kind of person. I don't like it when you do this. I like it when you do that, right? And make small commitments to each other. Just lays the groundwork for much more effective teamwork.
So micro commitments, that's a really good one. I'm going to keep that one as one of those for later on. Excellent. So we've looked at some of the things that can go wrong here, and you've been talking about IQ, intelligence quotient.
Yeah.
But let's start to shift the lens to where you actually bring people to, because you mentioned three things basically on, and it's front and center on your LinkedIn profile. I love it. It's very simple. So I'm going to say this carefully because I said it to one person. They asked me why I was swearing at them. So, and you'll see in a moment. IQ, intelligence quotient, EQ, emotional quotient. And then this last one, FQ. And that's the one which I said too fast before. And somebody said, why are you swearing at me? But focus quotient.
Yes.
So let's talk about that for a second. So what does it actually look like when strategy meets emotional intelligence and focus?
And focus, yeah. And the FQ, the focus quotient, does make people laugh. And actually, our company sponsors the local football team, and we have FQ on the billboard around the banners around the stadium. It's not by accident. It's to intimidate the other football, you know, the opposition team. Yeah, and it's not unknown for some of the supporters to chant FQ, FQ, FQ. Anyway, that's an aside. But look, from my 20 years of doing strategy, and I'm a high IQ person. Yeah, I always thought when I was a student, if you have the right answer, it solves everything. So I doubled down on IQ, and that's what a lot of techies do. So of course you need a great answer to any challenge you have in life or any goal that you want to achieve. You need a great strategy. That's the IQ part. By the way, a lot of people come up to me and say, are we going to take a Mensa test? No, I use IQ as a shorthand for, do you have a great idea? Do you have a great strategy? Okay.
Right.
So that's the first component. You need that. And incidentally, you can't have a great strategy or great idea if you don't have an objective. Now, so many clients or so many teams do not have clear objectives or really clear on what problem they need to solve. So we spend a lot of time there with team. But yeah, have that pillar of IQ. Have a really good idea. And spoiler alert, most of us can sharpen our idea. Okay. Yeah. Don't get overconfident that you've got the perfect answer. There's always a way to get a sharper idea, but we'll park that. But that's not enough. Right. This is where the emotional quotient comes in. You need others to buy into that idea. You need others to get excited and work around your idea, because otherwise it's just a piece of paper. And that's where, if I'm honest, 90% of my consulting career went. We would go in with a very smart answer. We'd show it to the client. They'd nod, thank us, pay us. We'd go back 6 months later. They weren't doing it. And I became fascinated with this. I went back and did an audit of all the projects I'd ever done. And I found the same things happening. The team didn't understand it completely. The team didn't buy into it, right? Or half the team didn't like the other half of the team, so they never worked well around them. And so I kept finding all these EQ reasons why the strategy didn't take off. And I was like...
And so when you say EQ here, that you're basically talking about, see if I can get this right, it's not only just the emotions, but it's the reaction to the smartness.
Yeah, because... smart people look at an idea through smart lens. Hey, here is your new, you know, here's the new strategy for how to break into the US market. However, someone sat around the room, looks at that, and they have an emotional reaction, which might be, oh my God, that looks like a lot of work to me. Oh my God, I'm going to have to relocate. Oh my God. So as great as the IQ is, if you're not looking at the EQ part, just how is the human being reacting? How is the team and accommodating that and talking about it? It doesn't matter how good that idea is, because that person, even if they're the nicest person, might slowly sabotage the idea or be resistant to it. Or so you've got to factor in the emotional aspect of your great idea.
And is it as simple as just every now and again taking a checkpoint and going, how do we all feel about this?
Yeah, that is a big part. And the other thing that I tell every leader is you can't push your own ideas consistently on the team. Right. Because human beings like to see themselves reflected in their work, in their decision-making. If everything is you telling them what to do, that is going to build up. Of course, there are times you just say, this is what we're going to do. This is the approach. Yeah. The more you can involve them, even just a little bit, the more they'll be on board with your idea.
And this is one of these things that I often use when I'm talking to CTOs who are wondering, you know, why their tech strategy, their engineering approach wasn't understood or bought into, or why the normally the finance person pushes back completely.
Yeah.
And I say, well, were they involved with it? Did they feel as though there was a part of them in that piece of work? And that's very much about how they feel about it, rather than whether it's a smart idea or a good idea or not. It's just about, is this a surprise that you sprung on somebody with a, you know, fully laid out thing, or is it somebody that you built and co-crafted with them so they feel as though they've put a piece of themselves into it?
Yeah, 100%. And it can be the smallest sliver of themselves that makes the difference.
But they have to see some sort of reflection of their approach, or that sometimes it's even as simple as, okay, that takes me into account, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's amazing how even that small, they'll leave the room and start talking about our idea, not the boss's idea. Oh yeah, we're going to. And then you start to see the impact, those little micro commitments, that sort of endorsement. So that's where the EQ pillar is phenomenally important. But it's not enough, right? You can have a great idea, you can have everyone brought on board, but here's where I saw the Achilles heel, and it's my own Achilles heel, the lack of focus, right? Because I've worked with teams that work really well together, have smart ideas, but they are not focused at all. They start things, they never finish them. They have 100 ideas on the go, right? They hit a roadblock, they stop, right? That's where this focus quotient came in. It was a shorthand for, are you prioritizing your idea? Are you anticipating things that are going to stop you? And are you pre-sorting for them? Because those are the best teams in the world, right? Have those three, the combination of those three things, and you are going to take off whatever your goal, whatever challenge you are throwing. But if you lack one of those things, that's what's going to hold you back.
And in terms of this focus quotient, I mean, when we're trying to sort of boil this down for people to think about it, is it just as simple as, okay, everybody now wants to drive in this direction?
Yeah.
Is it down to people having time commitment and the correct prioritization and clarity around that? You're nodding at both those. So I'm clearly on the right path here.
You're on the right path. Sorry, for those who, yes, yeah. Prioritization is where we start.
Right.
So many times, one of the first things we'll do when we suspect there's a focus problem is do an audit of how many initiatives they're doing on top of business as usual. And it will not surprise you, Adam, probably, but we generally quickly into the hundreds of projects, right? Strategy projects. And I just pause them and say, okay, would you try 200 new projects in your own personal life at the same time as just living? Like, would you learn a language, move house, you know, try and lose weight, all 200 things at the same time? And they go, no, of course not. That would be ridiculous. So I said, so why are you expecting your company to be able to do 200 different initiatives? And even if you did have the bandwidth, how are you expecting an individual employee or a team to decide, okay, it's Friday, we've got an extra hour, which of these projects should we work on?
When it numbers more than about five, it's just
of course
lotteries whether they pick the one that's most sensible.
And if you are not providing that clarity, then I assure you, your team will fill in the doubt with their favorites. And what are the odds that everyone in this company has the same favorites is very slim. So you're going to start to see cracks forming. So the single greatest thing we can help you with is to reduce that.
It comes back to one of my favorite stories, which is that it's a story of etymology, the history of words. And that is that before the 1940s, basically before the Second World War, that the word priorities was an academic entry in a very dusty old dictionary somewhere. Basically, the only word that was used was priority, single.
Yeah,
and it's only since then that we've had this idea of multiple priorities. And so, and I sort of think it's almost a digital era invention to have multiple priorities. And if we just focus on one and go back to this idea of a single priority, you're on a much better track. Now, clearly, most organizations can afford to have more than one these days with teams of hundreds, but
yeah,
I think it's a better bias than towards the 200 or so that you just mentioned.
I think so. And I suspect that entomology, you'll probably find the same with multitasking. It's a newer word that people swear by, but the science has disproved it entirely. And I get people who go, yeah, but I'm different. I can multitask. And I'm assure you, if it's a complex task, you cannot. And in fact, you are doing more harm than good, but they want to prove you wrong, and people are overconfident in their own abilities. But yes, prioritization is a big factor of focus question. Then the other aspect that I talk about is looking for your focus barriers, the things that rob you of focus that you're probably dismissing. Now,
can you give some examples of what a focus barrier would be then?
So obviously, a competing project is a very easy one to spot. Okay, right, really. But let's take something run-of-the-mill, like in an office, and you've got a printer that doesn't work. what happens every day is members of your team will go up, try and print something, won't work, they'll try and fix it, they'll kick it, they'll lose 20 minutes of their day, they'll go back, have to do a workaround, right? Later that day, another team member, exactly the same thing happens. All these are robbing from your productivity, your focus, right? And if you see this, best thing you should do is just eliminate that immediately. Go and buy a printer, right?
Yeah. It's a wonderfully mundane example, isn't it?
It's a very mundane example. The other one I give is you sat and you give a team, or personal example, right? You're sat at your desk, you say, today's Friday, I've got this very important report to write, I'm going to give it all my attention. Okay, but then your phone goes and you get distracted by emails, and so you lose 10 points of your attention. Let's say you had 100 points, you're down to 90. Then a bit later on, you get very warm in the room, so you know you have to open all the windows, and your attention goes to the warmth of the room. You know, a bit later on, you get hungry, so your brain goes to, what am I going to have for lunch? So before you know, all these micro things chip you down to only 50% focus from what you said was the most important thing of your day. Now, if you had anticipated for the day ahead, right, you would have pre-made a lunch, you would have gone and have a fan in the room because you know it's going to get hot as you're working there. Yeah, you will have locked your phone away for the day. So it's about that anticipation of the focus barriers and eliminating them so that you can stay as close to 100% focus as possible.
And I'm smiling away here because some of these sound really, really relevant and current.
Yeah. And this is the tension to detail. So if I'm running a board meeting for one of my, you know, senior clients, a Coca-Cola or an Amazon or so, you know, or a senior group, I will pre-think of absolutely every one of these because I do not want those people in a room who are there to decide really important stuff being distracted by completely minor stuff that will hijack their focus.
Yeah. So you try and literally live by this example of trying to figure out everything else and keep everybody on the path to success as you see it then.
Yes. Yeah. And so we use a lot of technique, you know, a lot of pre-mortems. Let's anticipate everything that will go wrong on our path for this, be it on a daily basis, but usually on a project basis. Let's get all those potential pitfalls up front on day one, and therefore we can pre-eliminate them.
Okay. And that's one of the key things to ensuring that the focus stays on track.
Exactly.
But I guess also it forces everybody to think through what could go wrong, and therefore there's probably a little bit of empathy going in there in terms of what are other people going to consider that could go wrong as well.
Yeah, it's a great technique like that. Improves your IQ, i.e. the quality of your idea. It improves your EQ because you're allowing people to surface future issues that they think might be relevant and will double down on your FQ. So there's a lot of techniques that flow through, and that's why these things are interrelated. You cannot just be an IQ person. Of course, you have emotions, you have focus. So yeah, this is the way we look at it, the combination of three elements that you need to be successful.
Yeah, it sounds pretty powerful. So are you able to bring that to life? I mean, I don't know whether you need to, if you have any examples where you can talk about the name of the customer, but an example where you've taken a customer through one of these transformations, whether you've taken them from, I don't know, whether it's that room with people who are jockeying for the best idea or a room of people who are dysfunctional, and get to the point where they are, you know, exhibiting these kind of best behaviors that you see.
Yeah, sure. Let me bring it to life for you. And because invariably when we go in and look at a team and understand what they're trying to work towards, we will make an assessment of which of those three pillars is the wobbliest.
Right.
Yeah. And we're kind of like, you know, you're in a bar and you've got a table. We'll sort of write the wobbly leg. And so we fill in the gap and we work on that first. Unsurprisingly, a lot of our work, a majority of our work is in the EQ pillar. So let me give you an example from that.
Right.
So we've been working recently with a very senior team of traders in a financial institution. And what became very apparent is that the team lacked EQ. They actively saw each other as competitors. And that was partly by how they'd, A, their conditioning, they'd grown up all as traders, right? So winning was everything. But B, their incentivization was if I'm successful, I get more of the pot than you do.
So obviously, the competition was kind of built into their, well, everything.
It was built in, and it'd be all their feedback loops throughout their careers. So, and this was really highlighted to us when I started working with the team. I meet everyone one-on-one and just try and build some trust and try and understand their world. And I said to one of the team, I said, tell me about the person you sit next to day to day. Yeah, you know, what are they called? Oh, well, his name's John. Okay, what do you know about? I don't know anything about him. Why would I know anything? I was like, humor me. Does he have kids? Does he, does he have a dog? He said, I don't know. Why do you keep asking me all these questions? I said, how long did you sit next to him? Have you been sitting next to him? 8 years. And I said, 8 years and you don't know anything. He said, no, why should I? I'm not here to learn about John. I said, okay. And this is when I realized they have no sort of connections or ties to each other because of this frame. And that was holding them back as a team, because as much as they had individual responsibilities, they also collectively had to make trading decisions on behalf of the company.
Right. Yeah, because often, I don't know if this is the case here, but from my experience of working in investment banking, people often work on a desk,
yeah,
which is like a sort of a collective team, isn't it, where they have the goals for the team as well.
Yeah. So these were all working individually in individual regions, but they came together to make global decisions for the company as a desk.
Right.
And it was the global decisions that were terrible. They were underperforming the market. And the boss was really worried, and this is where we were coming in. So we had a clear goal. We need to get that thing. But what was happening was, because they weren't a team, they weren't sharing knowledge. They were seeing each other as competitors. They weren't saying, hey, I've got some crucial piece of intel that I should introduce this team so that they can all know.
They were just hoarding it.
Because their default setting was, well, you know, if I help him, then I lose from my bonus. So once I realized this, I said, I need to get more EQ into this team, but I need to do it on their terms. Because me just sitting there saying, hey, you should know about John and whether he has kids and whether he likes mornings or nights and whether you should give him information, you're not going to change your behavior. So I gathered them all together at the next meeting and I said, we're going to play a game. Who wants to play a game? And they all looked a bit sheepish. I said, oh, you get a chance to win money off each other. Suddenly they're all interested. Okay. I said, okay, the game is you each have to put €100 in the middle and the winner takes all. And there's a team of 10. So you're going to win €1,000. It's a quick game.
Wow.
And they all suddenly got excited. They all either transferred the money or they put it, or they committed. And they said, okay, what's the game? And I said, okay, round one, we're going to play a round each week. Round one is, how many kids do we all have? And they looked at me and I said, you've got to write down on a piece of paper exactly the number. And the person who gets the number right gets all the money. And so they all guessed and however they determined their number. And I said, okay, once they've given me their numbers, I said, there's only one way to find out. We have to go round one by one and find out. But I didn't just ask how many kids. I said, what are their names? How old are they? And I'd spent 5 minutes per person on the details around their kids.
Right.
So 1 week.
But really going into that sort of the human connection around
human
it.
Human connection, right?
Yeah.
That's what I needed. So that was round one, week one. We learn all about kids. Round two, we learn about pets. Round three, favorite holidays. Round four, you know, dream homes. Round five, you know, the cuisine, you know. And then we started to get into work things. You know, am I morning? Do I like big picture? Within 4 weeks, team performance starts improving. Within 4 weeks, these people are just talking to each other naturally over coffees. How are the kids? How's that holiday? And within 3 months, the team are making 6% more profit on their trades as a team.
Wow, it's amazing you could measure it that quickly and that the numbers changed so fast.
Then the numbers changed so fast. And the boss was amazed because he's a high IQ person. He was contributing this. He didn't. And he said, I don't know what you've just done on my team.
Despite being part of the old
mess session. Despite sitting there. And I said, John, I've done what you should be doing every day. I've been actually bringing them together as humans. And you can see the improvement on their performance. And he was just flabbergasted. And the good news for me is he then talked to his peer and said, you want to get Faris working with your team, he can do amazing stuff. And so they've been a regular client for us for the last couple of years. But that's what I talk about, the power of fixing the EQ to improve the IQ and the output.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. That's a really good story. And so one of the things I would ask then going on from there, so if you were sort of to look at the average tech team, you must have dealt with a lot of tech teams, and you were to say, okay, in general, knowing nothing about your team, if I was to just guess and tell you 3 to 5 things that you should probably make sure you've got right.
Yes.
Would you be able to rattle those off?
Yeah, sure. All right. I'd say to every leader, and the leader is crucial, is do you know enough information about each of your team members? All right. Get to know the basics about their names, their kids, hobbies. And are you creating enough space for them to get to know each other? Right. That would be the hygiene factor number one.
Right.
And that can be as silly as just leaving 5 minutes at the start of a meeting to just do some informal conversation. You know, a lot of very technical people don't understand or don't like small talk, but it actually serves a purpose.
And it's not too hard to lead people through it either. I've been in quite a few sort of stand-ups where it's often a product person who comes in and joins engineers and deliberately just sort of takes over the first 5 minutes, just to ask a few questions here and there to do pretty much exactly what you've just been describing with that trading team.
Yeah. And, you know, step number two, which is an extension of that, have you done a dedicated session to agree a ways of working together? Sounds really silly, but loads of teams skip this step. And it can be simple commitments. Hey, do you know what? We're going to try as best we can, never have a meeting before 8 a.m., right? Send no emails to each other. And this is where it starts, and it can get more technical, right? But just agree these rules. And during those sessions, I often get team members to articulate the single thing that is most important to them at that point in their life that they would like the rest of the team to be aware of and to help protect. And it might be for one person, Wednesdays, I'd love to get home and put the kids to bed. But for another person, it might be Tuesdays, I've got a ballet class. And it's not for the team to judge. It's you've told us that's really important. We now are aware we're going to help you and we dedicate everybody. We protect one thing for them. That can be such a world of difference, both for knowing, but also for that person that actually my teammates are behind me now on this thing.
Yeah, and it often helps when it comes to working with other teams as well, because that's often where the clashes and conflicts come in.
Yeah.
Oh, that thing needs to be done on a Tuesday. I know it can't be her because we're going to try and keep her Tuesday free, for example.
Yeah. So get to know your team, have a ways of working session. Three, then how you run the meetings, right? Make sure you try and involve first of all, make sure you invite only the right people. But if you are having a session, actually involve people. Right. If people are turning up and they're not talking at meetings, then you've got a question for yourself. Could that have just been a asynchronous sort of communication out to the team? But when you have groups of people together, you want to hear all their voices. They want to be involved. It goes back to what we were saying earlier. People like to see themselves and things. So That's a quick hygiene check that I check.
Yeah. So involve everybody in the meeting or change the meeting.
Or change the meeting.
Right.
Because there should be a big clue. If a meeting is just a boss broadcasting to the team, that didn't need to be a meeting.
Yeah, haven't we?
That's a status update, right? Meetings should be about getting ideas, inputs, right? Hearing different voices or social aspect. But say, so, you know, I've got a whole tranche on, we go in and we change how meetings are run and the sort of hygiene around meetings. And it's amazingly uplift. I once went into a tech company and taught everyone how to run meetings effectively, and sales went up by 1.5%.
By changing the tech meetings.
By changing the tech meetings.
That's a wonderful statistic.
These were meetings around the business, not just between the sales team. These were around the business. It just created a better culture, both inclusion, productivity, meetings finished earlier. You know, people actually had clear actions. People knew what each other were committed to doing. And all these small things that make the difference in teams. Right?
Yeah.
And a big factor, number four, on those meetings, even if everyone's speaking, I encourage bosses to speak last. All right. That's what I look for in healthy teams, because bosses have a disproportionate impact. Even if everyone has 10% of the airtime, if the boss goes first, they set the tone. And I see this very clearly when I go over to the Far East, right?
Right.
Everyone waits for the boss to say, and then they just repeat what he said. And I'd be like, hang on, in my head, I'd be like, in a one-on-one, you did not have this viewpoint. But of course, the cultural overlay. So the simple way to change it is, if I'm working with the Far East team, I say, your boss is no longer allowed to speak first.
Yeah.
That's big for
that's it. A nice simple rule.
It's a nice simple rule.
I quite like there's a book by Simon Sinek, Leaders Eat Last, which is a similar kind of concept. And it's something that I recommend to a few people, especially where you've got that one person who's going into a meeting and goes, we've got this problem. I think this. What's your idea? It's like you're just inviting me to do the nodding donkey thing where they just all agree with you. And I'm sure you've seen that a number of times. I certainly have.
Yeah, I see it a lot. And actually, I think that's another sort of rule that I do with bosses who have a tendency, and many, or it's not just bosses, but strong people who have a tendency to shoot down other people's ideas. Okay. The worst thing to, particularly if it's an ideas session, the worst thing in the world to do is shoot down an idea. You can close them down quietly later after the meeting. But if you shoot them in real time, it creates the fear around everyone else. I'm not going to put forward any ideas. It really sort of belittles that person. So
I'm certainly guilty of that one myself, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we all did. So if I see that, I'll say to a boss, okay, here's the new rule for you personally. Every time you do it, and we're going to watch back a video and count, you're going to put £100 into the team social fund. All right? The first time I did this with one client, just in one meeting alone, he put £2,500 into the team social fund because he couldn't help going, well, that won't work. All right, that's, you know, and he wasn't, you know, he genuinely thought he was helping, but I was like, what you're doing is creating a sense of fear in your team. They're going to just stop giving you ideas.
It's kind of the opposite of psychological safety, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that must have been a really good social down the pub that Friday night then.
I made sure to join them for that one.
Wow, so I asked you for about five things and you got through four.
Yeah. So, yes. So make sure there's space to get to know each other. Have ways of working. Speak last, right? Involve everyone. Speak last. Don't shoot down people's ideas. And celebrate. This is something that is skipped often in high IQ teams: celebration, recognition, right? Feedback, the praise. Everyone's quick to give negative feedback, but giving praise. And I heard a great thing from someone that I adopted a few years ago. And I was like, I can't believe I never realized I said it. If you have something positive, write it down. Send it formally in a written.
Okay.
Because human beings like to show other people, hey, look, I got this praise from my boss today. I got this thing, right? It doesn't have to be a certificate. Look, if it's something negative, say it face to face. It can get
and preferably one to one.
Yeah, and one to one, not in a public. Yeah. It can get misinterpreted when it's written down, negative feedback.
Yeah.
And also, if it's written down, they'll keep going back and haunting and rereading it. And so it's the reverse. So don't forget to do praise, but do it written down. Do it publicly.
Yeah, publicly is the one thing I've often suggested to people is, you know, when you've got something, you think about it, the next time there's at least three people gathered together, give the praise then so that everybody can hear it. But I like the writing it down thing. But celebrate, generally, though, your point is celebrate and recognize the wins, the successes, the things that people do well, because it does two things. Number one, it gets people to sort of feel involved and engaged. But secondly, it reinforces the behaviors you actually want to see everywhere, which is not always the easiest thing to do. A lot of leaders worry when I'm talking to them, especially technical leaders, how do I create the right culture? And this is one of those really powerful ways for doing it, isn't it?
It's 100%. And what's really surprising is how uncomfortable people are. You know, I often do a spot exercise with people where I like, let's just pull a name out of a team member with a hat. You just have to give them a compliment on anything. From you, and you'll see people sit there, stammer, and go, "Oh, can you skip over me? Can you come back into me?" I'm like, just give them a simple compliment about anything, their dress sense, their hairstyle, and they'll be sitting there looking. I need more time, and I'm like, wow, this is a muscle that you guys are really weak on. If you can't do this on anything, how are you going to give praise on work, on more, you know, on more specific stuff? Right? So we do actively work to build that up in some teams.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good idea. I've worked with one company where they had a particular Slack channel where every Friday, and it was normally one particular person who'd kick it off, but it was basically just Feedback Friday was the name of the channel. And everybody would basically post compliments and thanks and recognition. And it would be like a little bit of an avalanche is that once that person had sort of started it off, people would go, oh, it's Friday. It's Feedback Friday. I should be giving. And so it really built into that, exactly as you just said, practicing that muscle regularly at a company level. And in a very public way as well. But interestingly, that was written down. So it really sort of backs up your point about making it written down.
But there you go. There's five things for any tech team, any tech leader.
I absolutely love that. So know your team members, number one. Number two, agree the ways of working. Number three, involve everyone in a meeting or change the meeting. Number four, leaders speak last. I love that one. It's one of those tips I use very often. And five, celebrate and recognize. Very simple, straightforward playbook. And that essentially helps people to get better with the IQ, EQ, and FQ combination. Because you express it, formula as sort of a multiplication of all three, don't you?
Yes, because anything multiplied by zero, as the old maths teacher, anything multiplied by zero equals zero. Because a lot of tech teams go, well, we've got the best idea in the world, high IQ. I'm like, yeah, but there is absolutely no EQ. That's a zero. So multiplying it just eliminates all the good work you did in the IQ pillar.
Now the math makes complete sense.
Now the math makes complete sense. So yeah, just if you are not particularly strong in EQ, I encourage everybody to just look at every team member as their best friend. Have a conversation with them as you would have with your best friend.
What a wonderful way to go. Faris, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. And I'm sure that people will want to learn more. How can people find out about more?
It's been great talking to you too. And I'd love to talk to every listener and viewer one-on-one. So come and find more about the company at sheerghetto.com. And you can contact us through there. We share tips there and lots of more examples that we've been talking about. Or come and find me personally through LinkedIn. Faris Rankin, there's only one I've checked. I do post every day little tips around IQ, EQ, and FQ. But equally, I reply to every message. So you can carry on the conversation with me there.
And a wonderful conversations you'll have, I can guarantee, just on the introduction I got from Faris to begin with. And you'll definitely see his profile if you see that formula, IQ, EQ, FQ in the top banner. That's very, very distinctive. And you also have an assessment, don't you,
yes,
Faris?
Yes, if you want to know how you rank on your IQ, EQ, and FQ, go to the company website. We've got a quick assessment quiz. Put in whatever you're working on at the moment. It could be personal or professional, and you'll get an assessment of how sharp you are and where you can sharpen up.
Yeah, take yourself onto that human whetstone journey. Faris, it's been wonderful speaking to you. Thank you very much for your time. And yeah, we hopefully look forward to seeing more about this formula in the future.
Thank you very much, Adam.
And for those of you still listening, please make sure you like and follow the CTO Playbook, as we'll be expanding some of the things that CTO Playbook does in the near future. More details on that on the website. Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.